Names are so complicated and so interesting. I mean, even the plainest name in the world, I don't know, Jane Smith, can carry all kinds of family history and baggage. Maybe Jane was named for a dead relative, and she's had to live with that ghost all her life. Maybe the ordinariness of her name has made her feel invisible. Canadian psychoanalyst Mavis Hymes has seen a lot of clients struggle to come to terms with their name, or discover new meaning in a name they took for granted. She writes about both in a book called The Power of Names.
The name is something that I would describe as a house in which we live. It's a house that we're given, and through our life, we make it our home, that we kind of appropriate it and make it our own. This name that we may not like, but more importantly, that brings with it a long tradition, a long history, perhaps, the surname I'm speaking of here. And so there is coming to terms with one's family and one's heritage as well.
And this is the central thesis of your book, is that our names have much more power in our lives than we tend to realize.
Yes. We think of earlier centuries, then the surname really was tied to one's bloodline in a very concrete way. It represented land, it represented tradition, it was associated with a badge, a herald, that said, you are such and such a person from this bloodline, and this is the way we have to behave. And we also live and die for this name. You know, wars were fought over names. Bloodlines had a lot to do with wars and territory. That shifted over the years, and that's not where we're living now. But there is trickling down through this notion of, you know, we carry this name, and in our family we do certain things.
Well, there's also there's also the notion that today a name confers a legal identity, and in that sense, that's another form of power, right? You know, maybe it's not the power of the family you've inherited, but it's your connection to the power of the state.
It very much so. And we think of when you're stripped of that, thinking of the Nazis stripping the Jews of their identity during the Holocaust, that taking away their names and writing numbers on their forearms was a way of stripping them of their humanity as well.
Yeah. To be nameless is to be exiled from the human family, to be a non-person.
Exactly.
You have your own personal reason for getting interested in names, right? Because your interest began with your own family name, Hymes, which is a shortened version of what the original family name was.
That's right. My surname was Hymovich, and my father, who was one of nine siblings, he and his brothers, there were seven of them, decided to abbreviate the name in the 1940s in order to remove the ethnic Jewish-sounding element. So not unlike many immigrants, not only Jewish, and it still happens now.
When that happens, when people change their names in order to disguise their identity in some ways, do you think that people carry a sense of a hidden identity, a secret second self?
I absolutely do. Words, and particularly names, leave traces. And as a psychoanalyst, I believe in something called the unconscious, which means I believe that there are things over which we're not completely aware, things over which we have no control until we become a little more aware of them, but that things get registered, important psychic events get registered somewhere. For me personally, and it only something I became aware of later, those missing letters in my name from Hymovich to Hymes did have some impact on me. It suited me, but it also concealed something that it was important for me to acknowledge.
Well, it's interesting thinking about why some people choose to deliberately change their names. I mean, I'm thinking of famous examples like Prince, who became the artist formerly known as Prince, or, I mean, so many writers, Mark Twain, all kinds who've chosen
many
pen names.
Many. So certainly there are different categories of people who change their names. So there are people whose names, celebrities, who want a name that's more sexy, that's more appealing. But then there are also those people who carry the psychological weight or burden of their name that's intolerable. And I can give you one could be psychological in a case where there's been sexual abuse or horrendous, horrific abuse, I've seen that clinically, where the only way to come to terms with one's past is to really make a cut and to change one's name. And then you have people who bear the names who are the children of someone like Lenin or Stalin or Hitler.
Well, so you also wrote, you wrote about an Israeli filmmaker who made a documentary called Hitler's Children.
That's right. And all those people who whose fathers in particular carried out horrific crimes against humanity, who struggled with the weight of that name.
Yeah, growing up in Germany and your last name is Himmler or Göring.
Exactly. And even I met a gentleman at a bed and breakfast in Toronto who emigrated from Germany after the war, and his name had been Adolf, and he had to change that name.
Historically, haven't there been plenty of cultures in which there's an idea that your true name has power and that you might have a secret true name known only to you or only to those you choose to share it with?
There are some cultures, so in Judaism, there's a notion that the name is so powerful and that there's something so essential about one's name. To know one's name is to know the essence of a person, that if someone is very sick, there's a ritual that's performed, that's a name-changing ritual, in order to fool the angel of death. So if I change, you know, my child's name from Susie to Mary, maybe I'll confuse the angel of death and she'll pass over. So there's a name change in that sense.
You write about, you had a client, right, who told you that's what had happened to him?
Yeah, as someone I knew, in fact, that they had this secret name, and to this day, because it had that kind of power, he was reluctant to tell me what that name was. His name had been changed. Yes. Traditionally, in mythology, to know the name of a god, I'm thinking of the Egyptian myth of Isis and Ra, the king Ra, and that Isis was trying to if she got to know the name of Ra, that would be to have his power, to take his power. And same in the biblical tradition, that to know the name of God was to know to have some of his power. That's why when Moses asked God, according to the Bible, when he said, "I am who I am," he didn't give Moses his actual name. And so Jews are not allowed to pronounce the name. They say, "My Lord," or "the Eternal One." There are other names for God.
That makes me think that I was going to ask you, do you think everybody or most people feel ambivalent about their names?
I don't know. It's always conscious. Even if one likes one name, I mean, at one level, there are people who like their name, people who are not so crazy. I talked to many people who said, gee, I wish I had another name. You know, this is such a boring name, or this is such a this name, or that, whatever. But that's not the level at which the ambivalence is, because I think the ambivalence goes more to how the name was given, in what were the expectations and hopes? Did one live up to those? That's the sense of what I mean to inhabit one's name, to separate from one's parents, to really own one's name and to begin to speak in the name of, in one's own voice, without all of the weight of what was expected. So in that sense, it speaks to a kind of psychological birth of the person, you know, coming into one's own.
Mavis Himes is a psychoanalyst and the author of The Power of Names, Uncovering the Mystery of What We're Called. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio, NPRI, Public Radio International.